Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro, and let's just face it, you're probably tuning in to see if I've turned bearish on bonds, and no, I haven't. My conviction remains completely strong. That's right, we've got the crown. And today, we're going to talk about how gold is signaling deflation, right? That doesn't make any sense. How could that be? We're going to look at commitment traders reports. We've got some great ISM report charts from my buddy Julian. We've got COT reports, as I mentioned, CTA positioning. I mean, this is going to blow you away. We're going to look at all that trading going on in TLT, try to figure out what's really going on. But let's talk about gold, because gold doesn't make any sense, right? You look at the big picture, what are we being told? Central banks print money. Now, we know that's not true, but that's what everyone believes. Then we're going to see really high rates of inflation. Well, that should be gold, good for gold too. And the economy is just going to go booming. I mean, you have three things, if all were true, even if you just had two of them. How about just one? That would be really bullish for gold. Now, we covered this chart on the Sunday Chart Show. I'm not going to go into it in too detail. But for those of you who don't watch the Sunday Chart Show, what we're looking at is gold coming down to 1700 here. It's in this big topping pattern. And if it gets through 1700 is or just a little below here, it's threatening a bigger move down into the 1500. You can see the price moves very quickly when it gets under the 1700. So you're looking at potentially high 1500s all the way down into the low 1500s as a move. Now, that seems really interesting to me, because a lot of people just don't understand that part of my thesis has been that there's going to be a flip between gold prices and bond prices. And we know that gold and bonds move generally together until they don't. And it's that time that they don't that it really, really matters. Now, let's look at some charts here from the FRED database. And I did remember to turn tooltips off. So here's what's going on. We've got gold in blue. I know it doesn't make sense that gold isn't blue. And the trade weighted dollar in red. And you can see that, you know, they aren't always inversely correlated. There are times, like right in here, that they go up together. And there are times that they go down together. So they're not perfectly inversely correlated, which is important to understand, because when they flip, that's usually not a good sign. You can see back in the financial crisis here, gold went down the blue and the dollar went up in red. And here they're both going down together. And this is signaling a problem, because at some point when gold keeps going down, it puts upward pressure on the dollar. Now, why does any of that matter? Well, let's look at the consumer price index against gold. Now, gold is turning red here. It's not for any particular reason, then it's red now. And if you look, when gold goes down, wow, look, the consumer price index tends to go down. Now, it's not perfectly lined up, but there's a decent relationship here. Gold goes down, consumer price goes down, gold goes up, prices go up. But if we really understand what's going on here, it's because of the relationship between gold and the dollar. Now, again, they're not always perfectly inversely correlated. There are plenty of times they run together. But now look what happens here. The dollar starts to rally. Consumer prices go down. Dollar goes down. Consumer prices go up. Dollar goes up. Consumer prices go down. Here, dollar's going down. Consumer prices, right on the money, going up. Now, if the dollar starts to reverse here, because of the downward pressure on gold, again, at some point, downward pressure on gold is going to cause the dollar to go up. What does that mean consumer prices are going? It means they're going down. Now, what does that mean for the bond market? Well, the bond market loves weaker consumer prices. It loves falling consumer prices. And here you can see the 10-year treasury yield that everyone now thinks is going to, 3 or 4%. Says not so fast. If the consumer prices are indeed headed down, then this move up in yields is way overblown. And it's going to get reversed. And you can see how nicely it tends to reverse when consumer prices in blue are falling. So we know that that's coming. And so to me, this is really interesting, because gold is telling us something is wrong in the big picture. It's telling us there's deflation building. And how is the market positioned? Well, the market is max long inflation. I'm not sure there's ever been a bigger push of money concentrated inflation sensitive assets than there is now. There may be sometime way in the past, but at least in the last couple of decades, this is the biggest push in inflation sensitive assets. Everyone's on the wrong side of the fence. I look at like a teeter totter, right? And if you've got everyone misbalanced on one side, well, at some point that flip is going to cause major, major pain for a lot of people. So is the bond market really dead? Well, no, thanks to my friend Julian Biddle. He sent us this great chart that I, of course, asked him to run for us because the ISM came out today, and we need to look at that data in a minute. But I want to continue on this theme of where the bond market is and how people are wrong. And this has ISM prices paid in green and 10-year bond yields in gray. And so you can see that a peak in ISM prices paid, which we're at one of the highest levels ever, we're up top, and he ran this back to 1980, which is great. And you can see that these tops in the ISM correlate to peaks in 10-year treasury yields. In fact, Julian, he's a sharp guy. And you can find him on Twitter if you are interested in seeing more of his chart work. And he said there's about a two-month differential between the two. It's pretty tight. So what you're seeing up here in terms of ISM prices paid is telling us that, hey, you know what? This is probably not going to get a whole lot worse. And if this reverses, which it usually does, you can see when it gets up to these levels, it does, it tells you that the peak in yields is in. In fact, this peak is pretty weak. If you look at prior moves in the ISM, you can see it brought yields up quite a bit. But this time, as we know from our friend Jeff Snyder at Alhambra Partners, he said, look, he's been saying on his show with Emil Kalinowski, the Eurodollar University, that this is a very weak move up compared to past moves in yields. And you can see it all over this chart here from Julian. Now, from a positioning standpoint, you know, what you're already seeing is what goes on in this situation is people sell the most at the bottom. And so what's interesting here is we'll come over to the iShares 20-plus year Treasury bond ETF, and this is the largest traded a U.S. Treasury ETF long bond, and it's got shares outstanding is 99 million. Now, if you go back, and I'll show you in the charts here, let's go to TLT, and we'll zoom out to this here, and we can see these 2 days, Thursday and Friday, there were 96 million shares trading hands. Now, remember, half are going to be buyers, half are going to be sellers. So that means out of this 99 million shares that are sitting in this ETF, 48 million of them were sold and bought by someone else. 48 million shares were dumped because what do retail investors, what do most investors do? They sell when? At the bottom. That is right. They sell at the bottom. They look at the chart and they go, oh my God, this chart is terrible. It's only going to go to minus infinity. I better get out. And they sell at the bottom. And yet someone came in and said, look, hey, 48 million shares are being dumped. I'll buy them up. Now, I'm sure it's not one person doing it, but you start to get an indication that this is a bottom. And then today, there was almost 22 million shares traded hands. Cut that in half, you've got, say, 11 million. You're talking about another 10% of this fund changed hands today. You factor in Wednesday, and you've got, you know, close to somewhere around 56, 57% of this fund or more trading hand, no, I'm sorry, higher than that. We're talking like 65% of this fund trading hands in a 4-day period. So if you look, you know, does this mean there's a bottom here? No, what this means is what's going on in TLT? Well, let me show you. If you zoom in, I know we're a little out of order of what we normally do. We go to the economic data, but there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here, and I hope you appreciate this. Is now, I said on Friday, don't worry, some of this move is going to get reversed. I'm not surprised at all by what we see in the overnight. Now, why did it get slammed down in the overnight? Because you have to understand the psychology of this situation. So you have 48 million shares swapping hands. Now, the question we don't know is who bought the 48 million? Now, we know, I have a good idea who sold it, the people who are very weak-handed at this point and said, look, I'm going to sell at the bottom because that's what they do. But who bought, right? Are they strong buyers or are they weak buyers? Now, how do you know the difference? Well, retail investors use stop losses a lot. Professional money managers, institutional money managers, pension funds, anything like that, they don't use stop losses. So how do you know instantly who's playing the game? Well, in a big move like this over a 2-day period, it's simple. You slam it back down to see if you can bust any stops. Because what will a retail investor do? They will come in, right? They'll buy and they'll immediately pop a stop loss on. and say, okay, I got to protect this down move. And all you've got to do is just drive this thing down to find out, are these people strong buyers or weak buyers? And if they're weak buyers, they'll put a high stop loss on there and they'll go fleeing at the open. And what happened at today's open? Well, prices went up and down and largely went sideways right until the close. So what we see now, going back at least over the last 2 days, is the buyers in here are strong. And that's a positive sign. That's what we would want to see. Again, we don't know, are they dealers, are they institutional money managers, pension funds? We don't know who they are. But what we do know is they didn't turn into immediate sellers. And this is really important because when you look for a bottom, which we do not know this is officially a bottom, it has a lot of things you want to see as a bottom, but you need a lot, you need more to confirm this. But the volume alone, I mean, look, people draw like lines on charts all the time. You know, my buddy Travis, he's a self-proclaimed like crayon guy, right? He draws markers all over screens. He loves it, which is great. A lot of you love it too. There's one thing you can really trust. It's the volume. And in this case, you know the people sell the most at the bottom and the smart money buys the most at the top. Now, who else may be trading hands here? Well, this is interesting because we've got the CTA information from Nomura. Now, I can't tell you the proprietary CTA information I have from TD Ameritrade, but I do have it. But here you can see that in a report that came out today on ZeroHedge.com, it said the CTA positioning is the largest short position across domestic bonds since at least 2010. What does that mean? That means government bonds, U.S. and foreign. I mean, everybody is short government bonds. And then they posted this cool chart here, which I've seen before. And I'll walk you through it because TD Ameritrade does something similar to this. And again, all I can tell you is it looks consistent with what you're seeing here. I can't give you any of the trigger points. But here, the US 10-year, minus 100. What is this telling you? Max short position. This is the current price at when this report was run. So presume this was earlier today. This is the next trigger point. Now you see non. What does non mean on this report? This is the next point to sell. This is the next point to buy. They didn't put the top of it on here. So non means we can't go any shorter. We're already max short, man. We are so short, there's no shorter we can go. But if it gets up to 134 on the 10-year, 134.28, so there's going to be a little bit of buying. Now, whoops, you don't want to see me. Let's go back to here. Here is the 10-year Treasury continuous futures and 134 somewhere right in here. They're going to back off some of those mega short positions. Some, not saying all, some. So it tells you, you know, you look at this picture and you see everybody is super short. I mean, look at the Euro 10-year, max short, Japanese max short, Great Britain max short, Australia max short, Canada max short, Swiss max short, French max short. I mean, these things are massively short everything. I mean, no way to go lower. And so all this pressure is building up on the bond market. And someone said, hey, I want to buy a bunch of those shares up because everybody is folding. And when everyone is short, when everyone is betting against you, that's the time you want to look at taking the opposite end of the bet because there's a limit to how far people can short or go. I mean, there's a limit and there's a limit on the way up and the way down. You know, there's a reason equity markets peak because there's a point where you've got everyone who can go long is long. Same reason things get short and bottom because you've got everybody who can go short is short. And so I find this really interesting is it starts to look like the worst is probably over here. Now, the danger part for everyone who's short bonds and betting on inflation is these people are short, which means they're going to get squeezed when bond prices rise. And it may not take very much for that to happen. It could just be the Fed's continuous purchase program continuing it through QE to just chip away at this until it starts to unwind. Could be an announcement from the Fed. Could be a bad economic print that the market doesn't like. Could be anything. But so far, I like what I'm seeing here. Now let's take a look at the economic data coming out of China last night. Many of you probably noticed manufacturing PMI largely unchanged at 50. Remember, 50 is no change. Above 50 is an expansion, and the higher it is, the bigger the expansion. Below 50 is contraction. So you look at a 50.6 and you see pretty much unchanged. The services PMI, slight expansion, both of them weaker than the prior month. So it's saying a deceleration going on there. Imports into South Korea are way up. I think this has to do with some of the year-over-year data going back to February of last year, and exports are down slightly, but still about 9.5 is a pretty healthy number. Let's go into the cakes and manufacturing PMI out of China. This is, I believe this is a small business one, virtually unchanged at 50.9. Very slight expansion, worse than the prior month. How about going into some other countries? We've got the Italian manufacturing PMI, slightly faster growth rate than the month before. So that's positive. That's what you want to see. You want to see these growing at a faster rate than before. How about in France, growing at a faster rate? So all these were slowing down. I looked at a lot of them. They were slowing down in January, and all of a sudden they got a pop in February. Now, maybe this is something to do with the U.S. stimulus checks hitting and people spending money. I'm not sure. German manufacturing expanded at a faster rate than the prior month. That's good. Eurozone. Total Eurozone manufacturing, faster rate than the prior month. That's good. How about Great Britain? Slightly faster than the month before. So far we're seeing this recurring theme of, you know, a little bit better than the month before. Is it a sustainable trend? Well, that's hard to say at this point. How about Italian CPI preliminary? Up 0.6%. So a little more inflation coming out of Italy. And then German preliminary CPI went from 1 to 1.3, so a little more inflation coming out of the Euro, Germany. Maybe this is the peak. How about looking at the Canadian manufacturing PMI? Pretty much it expanded at a very slightly faster rate than the prior month. So a little bit better, following kind of the rest of the world. How about the U.S.? The market manufacturing PMI expanded at a slower rate. And this is what we want to see now. Is for a turnaround in the bond market, because we got that chart from Julian here, the saying, look, this thing's at a peak. Keep that in mind. Let's get into the official ISM manufacturing. It's official not because it's a government report, it's just considered the official report by investors. Expanded at a faster rate in February, so that's positive for the manufacturing sector, but is it now peaking out? Well, let's take a look. We've got prices paid, which we've got this, like, again, this handy chart from Julian saying, look, this thing is pretty much maxed out. Can it go a little higher? It can, but there's not much historically that this thing can go, which is great. And we know a peak in that signifies a peak in treasury yields. How about we look at new orders? Everyone's googly about new orders these days. They're crazy about it. And it expanded at a faster rate, at a very healthy clip. But let's go back here and look at the max chart and says, man, we're getting pretty maxed out on new orders too. So what you're seeing across this manufacturing PMI's data is it's maxing out, but what isn't maxing out? And that would be employment. I mean, look at the employment stuff here. This is not showing you signs of max employment. You want to see this thing up in the 60s and it's at 55. And where was it the month before? It was just slightly gold dazzled and crumbled. That's pretty timely. You've got this expanding slightly in January and a little bit faster. So manufacturers added some people back. Construction spending was up, and on year over year, I think it's running a little over 5%. Now, given last week we had some issues with the treasury auctions, I was kind of interested today to see what happened to 3 and 6 month bill auctions. And no damage, no excitement, nothing of interest going on there. All right, let's take a look at the commitment of traders report and see what's going on here. 10-year note futures are up. So hedge funds are taking long positions on the 10-year as yields are rising. Now, that's not something you normally see out of hedge funds. We've got the 30-year chart here showing that there was a lot of short covering. Now we'll go to our friend Brent Johnson of Santiago Capital, and he reports that, yes, there's a short covering. Speculators decreased their short position by a little over 34,600 contracts. And here is the big chart that we all like looking at, showing that, hey, they're still super short, but they covered some. Now, it's interesting is this chart is as of Tuesday of last week, which means if we go to, we'll just use TLT because it's the one we're all familiar with. It means they covered, let's see, this would be Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, they were covering here before this last move down. So that's kind of interesting. It makes me wonder now, did those CTAs, were they the ones that were dumping down in here on the 10-year? I don't know, could be. Maybe this is when they went max short. The hedge funds missed out on that move, that last move. And you think maybe this week they've covered. We'll see. What do we got from our buddy, Stefan? He sent us this chart on TLT showing the commercial positions are still very long while the speculative positions have backed off. Again, this just confirms what Brent is showing us, what Hedgeopia is showing us. Just says the commercials, though, are still very, very long, which is good to know because, you know, you people say, well, how do you know you're not wrong? Well, because the banks would have actually switched positions. How about West Texas Intermediate unchanged in the futures market? S&P 500 slightly less net short there as hedge funds still remain short. Euro unchanged and gold. Now, gold saw a little bit of a decline. Now, what's interesting to me about gold is people say, well, 1700's a strong spot. Well, not so much. There's a lot of long positions up here that were taken above 1700. And if you get under 1700, the next place people were taking longs is, well, pretty far down. As Hedgeopia says, hey, you're kind of looking potentially under 1500, maybe even worse. So a lot of longs sitting way up in this area. You can see they kind of around this 1500 mark. So there's some positioning there, but there's not a lot of strength as some of these positions start to get unwound from where people were taking them. How about the NASDAQ? Slightly net short on hedge funds. And we got small caps, still net short, no real change there. The dollar, it's very, very net short. Now keep in mind now, you know, if gold starts to unwind, you've got a lot of these longs right up here that are going to start to turn out. They're going to close out their positions, and that puts upward pressure on the dollar, which is in a max short position. Causes that to go up. Well, how about volatility? Well, we'll go back to our buddy Julian for this one. And he said, here's a VIX net speculative positioning. And he says that this is one of the deepest net short positions. And that tends to lead a near-term peak in the market. Not perfectly, it's not a timing mechanism. But he says, hey, keep an eye out on this because people are super short volatility. And that means that we are somewhat near a peak at this time. Anyways, I'm Steve Van Meter. Appreciate you being fans. Appreciate you staying in tune with me. Be sure to like, of course, when I get things on the right screen, subscribe. And we'll be back for the Wednesday Macro Show, where we will find out what's going on more with the bond market and in the macro world. Again, thanks for being fans. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only, is not intended to provide investment or other advice. It shows not to be construed as recognition or solicitation by a social security financial instrument or participating in a particular trading strategy. This video was paired by Steve Van Meter. Reports of passing business expressive video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advice, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.